It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Located in LaGrange, Illinois, Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, Jeff Sussman of the Bat Signal. This is Caffeinated Comics. Once again, it's probably our second podcast of the day if we had hit record, because well, for the last hour, we have been setting microphone levels and trying to brew coffee.
And wasting a lot of good material.
We wasted probably most of the material. I'm expecting this to be mellow because we did way too much improv while just listening to the sound of our own voices.
I expect the opposite. I think this is even going to be better because we're all warmed up.
We're going to rely on you, Dave.
We'll see. We're getting low on the coffee already, so anything's up for grabs. Mm. But as always, I'm your host, John Clark. I'm here with my co-host,
Stephen Brown.
And we are joined in the studio by Dave Redfield.
How you doing, guys?
No one's going to answer you.
Oh,
this isn't a radio show. This is a podcast.
Oh,
radio shows, they don't answer you. You have to wait for someone to call.
So call, yeah.
I'm calling this studio right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, how are you guys doing?
All right. We're doing fine.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so the topic today is U.S. versus England.
Oh.
So this is the Olympic meet.
That war's over, John. We won.
We did.
And yet we gave them everything. And that's my point is that...
Except their 13 original colonies.
Yeah, they don't want them now.
Not anymore.
I've been to most of them. They're pretty happy with what
they're
we got.
They're used.
But if you look around now, we have been in this constant state of anglophenia, which I don't think is a word, but I'm coining it.
Guys were in a constant state of anglophilia. I'm doing fine.
I was going to ask what that meant.
Ophelia of the Anglo-Saxons.
Yeah, well, look at the fascination now is with Doctor Who and Sherlock and Downton Abbey. We're constantly, immediately, it seems like every third show that's popular now is British.
Yeah.
Or ripping off a British show.
Right, yeah. It's with the American Office and then
Shameless.
Every show that failed. My favorite was the American version of Coupling. Because Coupling was the British version of Friends, except since it was on the BBC, they could actually talk about sex. And then they brought it over here, and they made Coupling and couldn't talk about sex. So they canceled Friends and tried to start Friends.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it didn't work.
Didn't work.
I don't know why it didn't.
They probably didn't have Jennifer Aniston on it.
No, maybe. They did not.
I believe,
which was one of the reasons they stopped making Friends. I think Jennifer Aniston wanted to stop making Friends.
You know what does upset me about the English? They're taking all our American superheroes. I mean, Spider-Man was played by an English actor.
That's another point, that's true. Yeah.
Batman,
yeah. Batman was
Superman.
A British director.
Superman's
an English guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about that.
I know. See, now the hatred's starting to
this
come
is
out.
How
we should go back to
pot.
War. There should be another war to get back all our
A war of
icons.
Intellectual properties.
It's only getting big. Well, and of course, the elephant in the room is Tolkien.
Oh, There you go. Know.
One of the most popular Star Trek captains, British.
Who's that? I'm liking a Star Trek.
You're right. You know nothing about Star Trek. I just gave Steven a look to go, you should know this. And then I realized, there's no way you're going to know this.
I don't know anything about
Patrick Stewart was also on Star Trek.
Oh, duh. I mean, I knew that.
Before he played Professor X.
I didn't make the
connection there. He had a role where he walked around a lot.
He played Professor X. See, that's how I know him.
Yeah, see?
All right.
He looked exactly the same.
Well, he had like that crown of hair.
Minus the chair.
But you know, the two films, he had a chair on the Enterprise.
but he would sit down
and then
get out of that chair
whenever he wanted.
And that chair stayed in one place, from what I remember.
I think it could pivot a little bit. There were a couple of times where the Enterprise got hit and it turned like 40 degrees.
You know what my favorite thing?
Listing.
How come every time...
That would be the worst thing to say if you're a starship captain of the flagship. When your ship gets hit, you just go... Ah!
How do you list in the vacuum of space?
I just like I feel...
Well, there's air in the ship. People can hear you cry. In space, no one can hear you scream, but in the ship, everyone can hear you cry.
Thank God.
Some more than others. I still don't understand how every time they get hit by asteroids, they all fall back and forth. And I'm feeling Don't you have force fields to, like, protect you from that?
Not inside the ship. That's a lot of energy to have a force field to keep you in your seat.
Isn't the prop, like, the purpose of a force field is to deflect, like, inertia and force, like, away from you?
Well, that's the point, is that they're hit by a force so strong, the force field is keeping the ship from being destroyed. But it's still going to throw everyone around, and for some reason, something in the ceiling is going to spark.
Yeah, it always seemed like the lights fixtures was like the first thing to go out. Like it just hadn't, that technology hadn't advanced past like the 21st century.
I think in the 21st century, like they just got rid of union workers, and that's why everything would just not work properly.
Well, they got rid of money, so you know.
Oh, that's your problem.
So you have to right there.
You have to take pride in your job, and if your job is installing light fixtures on the Enterprise, you're probably going to take more pride in your kids.
Yeah,
you just want to get out on time.
More. But back to the England thing. This is a recent. This Doctor Who thing, at least.
Well, that's like a big thing, because Doctor Who's been around since the 60s.
Yeah.
And it's only been in the last couple of years.
I would say, like, the last 5 to 8 years, maybe. Where now it's like everyone is into Doctor Who.
Except you.
I'm, like, the last holdout. I'm, like, you know, for posterity's sake. Somebody has to not be into it for everyone else to enjoy.
Well, and that somebody's got to be a guy who owns a comic book
store. That's right. Who sells Doctor Who crap like nonstop.
Constantly.
You know? You're Doctor Who memorabilia.
Memorabilia. They're all fine.
Reasonably priced at Chimera Comics, located 19 South Grange Road.
Well, somebody's asking.
We got the plug
raise.
Out of the way, Fest.
Yeah.
And with that, I am done. See you later, guys.
Well, it's interesting because Doctor Who would always. I always go back to Doctor Who with it. I first saw it in the 80s. My first comic book convention I ever went to, there were people walking around as Tom Baker with the big scarf, and I'm like, what is this? And
yeah,
and Marvel had a comic, and they were like, and somebody told me, this is England's version of Star Trek, and it was a guy in a scarf eating jelly beans in a phone box, and I was like, yes, this is England's version of Star Trek.
This is exactly what England would say
kind
Star
of
Trek
like,
is.
It's kind of like when you first meet a friend who celebrates Hanukkah.
It's like, this is your funny little Christmas that isn't quite right.
That really isn't that entertaining.
Right.
We have something much better than this, but if you want to keep this, that's okay with you. And then it just got in. Well, this new series is great, number one, but it also came in at a time when Star Trek was kind of done. I mean, between Enterprise ending and the J.J. Abrams film. It really found that niche and found that hole, and there were a lot of people who weren't willing to try it in the 80s because there was so much good Star Trek.
Maybe it was just like they had a placeholder for sci-fi or whatever. It's like, all right, we're watching Star Trek, and we don't need whatever Doctor Who is. Now Star Trek's gone. It's like, well, we need like a void. Like there's a void we need to fill. Doctor
right,
and there was no Voyager to fill that void anymore.
There was no Voyagers either.
Yeah.
With Mino Pilus and his stopwatch going through time.
My first experience with this whole entire Doctor Who phenomena was, honestly, where was I? I went to a convention and I saw the phone box, the TARDIS. And I was like, what is this? I always see this everywhere. And no one wanted to give me a straight answer because it was like, it was not cool to not know about Doctor Who. It's like, you don't know who Doctor Who is? It's like, clearly I don't. It's like, well, you're not worth talking to. And I'm like,
what does
that's
even
a,
mean?
That's a great way to get me into the so franchise
there. There's a 10-foot radius around you at a convention of people avoiding you for
and
not
no
knowing
one,
Doctor
no
Who.
At a comic book convention and people telling you you're not cool.
Yeah, it was.
At
it was,
a comic book convention.
Because it was cool to know about the Who, but and not the band. Oh, look at that.
It is British cool band. To know about the Who. See, you cannot get away from England, no matter how hard you try.
But it was that. I had no idea what Doctor Who was, and I had no idea what Battlestar Galactica was. And somehow I felt like they were
the same. The original one or the new one?
The new one. I somehow thought they were like the same thing. I'm like, oh, this phone box and these robots hang out together or something like that. And it wasn't actually until I was watching Freaks and Geeks when they mentioned Doctor Who, and I was like, whoa. This happened all the way back in the 70s. And I went online. I'm like, what is Doctor Who? Who is it? And all of a sudden, like, I even felt like a bigger fool. And I was like, do I have to watch every single episode? And it was just like, yes, you have to watch 452 episodes.
That's the first thing a Doctor Who fan will tell someone, which is the best way to not make someone a Doctor Who fan. That's like when you and Carm were starting to look at Star Trek. And you said, how do we start? And I'm like, I don't. No.
Yeah.
Because
you start with the Next Generation. That's what you start with.
Yeah, but you skip the first two seasons because they're bad.
Yeah. How did that happen?
It's very hard to find. What happened was they put on a bad show, and it was Star Trek, so it got good enough ratings to stay on the air.
That's incredible.
And by season three, they figured out how to make it good.
I think they were like, we need a plot, guys. And they're like, no, we're relying on the fandom to carry us through.
We need writers. Maybe we should hire some writers.
Well, they did have the writer strike in the middle of season two.
That's insane.
And kept going. They lost like two episodes.
And they're just like, let's just
they made
it didn't going. It didn't seem like we suffered much from that.
No, yeah, I was going to say, if the first three seasons were that bad.
The second season is actually better than the first season, and there's a writer's strike. Yes.
Wow. It seems like maybe they didn't have writers so much as like just a bunch of guys in a room like, I don't know what to do. Klingons. You know, it's just like, all right, let's bring on the Klingons.
Well, but I had to honestly, it was Netflix. Brought me once Netflix was us like, oh, Doctor Who episodes for free?
Yeah.
Sure, let's do it. And you see the first one. The first one is kind of rough to go through because you have so much high expectations for Doctor Who. And you're like, oh, they're fighting mannequins. I've seen this movie in the 80s and there's no Egyptian princess. But after the first episode, when you get to the second one, you're just like, wow, the world just got destroyed and everyone was okay with it. What is this show? And you get hooked after that.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I got into Doctor Who because so many people who did not know each other were recommending it. It wasn't like all my friends were into it and I had to get into it.
Right.
It was like guys like you, Dave, and then guys like Joe Pakovitz, who's been on the show, and then friends of mine that I was just talking to that I hadn't seen in years. Everybody was saying how good it was. And for me, it was the same thing. Netflix put it on, streaming. And I was like, let me watch it. And the first one... it was got you just used to the mythology again. It was like, this is the Doctor. He changes his face. He goes through time. He's got a box. He fights aliens. And then I'm like,
By the way, that's also the intro to the show. When you watch it, it goes like, he is the Doctor. He has a thing called the TARDIS. And he goes through and fights aliens.
And they actually sing it in the theme song. He's the Doctor. He's in a phone box. He's got a screwdriver that opens up anything he wants.
It's only the BBC version because we as Americans don't get that. But while Doctor...
We're not sophisticated enough to get that.
No.
But while Doctor Who was happening, what was America doing in the science fiction world?
When?
When the show, or while it was on? During the Russell T. Davis era. What did we have to counter Doctor Who?
What year
was Nothing. That? 2005. I mean, all I can think of is...
That was not so long ago.
No, that's when Batman Begins was out. That's when Revenge of the Sith was out. I can't think of any sci-fi job. Battlestar Galactica was on.
We were wrapping up
Battlestar Galactica.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that's why.
And crying and starting Batman.
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica was on. That was the one, and that was the one show everybody took it. And Lost. We had Lost.
Oh, we had Lost.
Lost was going
on. And everybody was nuts about Lost. But Lost was...
I was lost while watching Lost many of times.
Wow. That was another show.
Lost, I really enjoyed, and when I saw the final episode, I said, I have to buy this. And then I bought the complete Blu-ray, and I got about halfway through season one, and went, yes, I understand this now. And I went right back. I couldn't do it twice.
So while Doctor Who was happening, we had Battlestar Galactica and Lost.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I did not know that. What do you think was better, Battlestar Galactica or Doctor Who?
I think Doctor Who. Battlestar Galactica is so great in spots, and then it's so bad in other spots that my dad started watching it. My dad watched the miniseries, and he thought it was – and he was called me up. He had watched it streaming, and he said, well, he said it was interesting. He said, but – I don't know. I don't think it's going to be very deep. It would only be deep if they start talking about things like religion and whether cyborgs have souls and if they have to make hard choices. And I was like, that's what the entire series is about.
Like, Dad, stop talking and keep watching.
Yeah.
You know?
And then he loved the first couple of seasons, and now he still insults me because he didn't. Once they get to New Caprica in season three, I think season three is pretty much a wash, and then season four comes back. My dad did not think it ever came back.
Wow.
He was like, that's it for that.
I remember watching that on Netflix because people were telling me to watch that. And for a good period of time, I'm like, is there any part of this show that does not happen on the Battlestar Galactica? Because
they didn't have that big a budget.
Yeah.
And they never meet any aliens.
No.
No. And that was a show where a friend of mine had recommended it to me. Then you had recommended it. And it's like, all right. So I sat down and watched it on Netflix. Never finished it, of course. But it's like I got further in that than I did in Doctor Who. So I think it's easier to get into Battlestar Galactica.
Well, it has a more American feel. I mean, Doctor Who, you really have to cross that cultural.
They're talking because they got those accents. They talk funny. They have weird words for stuff.
Well, you know what? It's a lot like...
Closet means closet?
Yeah,
but you know, it's a lot like the learning curve when you discover Monty Python.
Oh yeah,
where you're into Saturday Night Live, and then you get into Monty Python, and there's constantly references to members of Parliament, and it's just this. It's just very much of its culture. That Doctor Who, once you, like Python, once you kind of unlock it, you kind of get totally into it, and I think that's kind of is. Is that the mystique of England versus the U.S.? Well,
here's one thing.
Is that it takes us, because we feel smart
well
when we do it?
Second companion Doctor Who was what, Martha Jones?
Yeah.
All right, so we have Law and Order here in the U.S., right? We have like 7 different versions of that show. I saw
It's the Star Trek of courtroom dramas.
Yeah, yes. I saw...
There's one that's in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, I saw
there's one with the Ferengi as the judge. Right.
I saw the BBC version of Law and Order, and I was like, all right, this is cool, British detectives. And then when it got to the law part, I'm like, why is everyone wearing wigs?
Oh, wow.
And why are people wearing these robes? And I found out that's how it really is.
That's what they really do.
Yeah, and I was just like, well, this is not going to work so well in the U.S.
Yeah, this isn't going to go over well.
There's no British, no American version of the British version of Law and Order.
That's what.
Oh, wait, shoot, there is. It's airing on ABC this fall.
Well, that's like Sherlock. The amazing thing I was just talking to with Bill Monroe about this is he is watching both the Stephen Moffat Sherlock and Elementary, and I would not watch Elementary because I'm like Sherlock was brilliant and America looked at it and went, Sherlock Holmes is public domain, we don't have to pay Stephen Moffat anything, let's just
do our own thing,
yeah, let's just rip it off. But he was saying it's a very different show in where Sherlock. Have you seen Sherlock?
Yeah, I saw the first season.
Okay, well, there's only 3 episodes in each season. The second season is up on Netflix now, and it's just as good. But
except for that second episode,
Hound of the Baskervilles was not great, and that was disappointing because the Hound of the Baskervilles is the most famous Sherlock Holmes novel.
Wasn't it the last novel?
No. I think it's the third.
Just to show you that I do not have a degree in English literature.
Yes,
I just found out Macbeth is not something you could order at McDonald's. Real quick, though, I actually know someone that worked...
I thought Macbeth was someone that worked at McDonald's.
Probably.
Dad should be their new spokesman.
Macbeth.
If they want to... Because McDonald's is all about reaching every demographic, which is why in the 80s they would have white commercials and black commercials.
Thing? Did they really do that?
They really did that.
Isn't that where the grimace came from?
No, he's no, purple.
No. What? No. Well,
it's a little warm here. Disclaimer on this podcast.
Now we need one.
The words of David Redfield are his Lord. Well, first of all, I just called Hanukkah the Doctor Who of holidays.
Yeah, so there you go.
That's true.
To all our listeners out there,
offensive podcast.
It really has. I thought this was going to be mellow.
No, thank God, no one's listening. Not when we're talking about the British. Quick tidbit.
Quick hate towards Mick Jagger.
Real quick. Australia, which used to be a colony of the British,
where they penal colony.
Penal colony. They actually have a
nickname. Say that again.
Penal.
They have a nickname for McDonald's. It's called like Mackens or something like that. But January 28th is Australian Day, and McDonald's is actually changing the signs for a bunch of McDonald's to
boomerangs.
To boomerangs.
Really? With
the nickname of Mackens. Boomerangs? So it's like they're using the Australian nickname of McDonald's. And they're going to be like posting it maybe on the East Coast here, but I know definitely throughout Australia for Australia Day.
That's awesome.
So I like Sherlock a lot, with the exception of that episode of the Hounds of Baskerville. And that ending, which I have a feeling won't spoil, but I just feel like they're going to do some cheap trick to solve that ending.
But real Stephen Moffat is not above cheap tricks, which I learned watching any of his Doctor Who episodes twice.
Yeah.
Because every time I go, that's the most brilliant writing I've ever seen. And then when I watch it again, I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. Totally bought this.
Now we're talking on the same page, John.
It's always a magic trick with Stephen Moffat. It's brilliant.
Where was Firefly? Was Firefly out the same time? Firefly was Joss Whedon. I know, but that was at the same time.
It was like 2001, 2002?
No, that was like 2003. But I mean, it came and went so quickly that it's like, on the heels of Buffy.
Wasn't close enough during the
last season of Buffy.
Angel was still out when Firefly came out.
Yes, because Angel lasted a year longer than Buffy did.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Joss Whedon is
more shows I never get into.
Yeah, well, this is very closely going to become the podcast of why can't Steven finish the sci-fi show.
I'm trying to push it off as long as I can.
Because you're afraid to open some dark doors in yourself.
I think there are some dark doors.
Somebody touched you during an episode of Space 1999.
And I'm just like, no.
You're like, Martin Landau, no.
Stay on Earth.
But where's the British version of Buffy is all I'm saying.
I think it's still Buffy.
You think it would be a better show?
If they got the...
It
would have been 10 episodes. If they got the current companion on Doctor Who right now, it would be a better show.
So as Buffy?
This is not the
as
redheaded Buffy. Girl from the all the...
No, that's one Amy of
the... She's gone.
And now there's a new girl.
Now it's a Clara. New girl.
And Clara.
Which is already the most confusing story ever.
Thanks, Moffat.
Yeah, and it's not coming back till April. I found out I think the last podcast I said, when is that coming back? Just found out April. Wow. It's like a longer break than it was to the Christmas special.
I think because he said he didn't want to have episodes airing during the summer.
Well, he said that last season because it was airing in the spring, but now I think it's going to happen again.
What's the logic behind that?
He just feels that people would rather be outside than inside watching Doctor Who.
I also think Stephen Moffat's close to burnout by doing both shows at once, and he's trying to get as much space as possible. Them. And Sherlock Season 3, there's still no word, because mm-hmm. the two of them are so busy.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both in The Hobbit.
I was going to say, these guys are in The Hobbit.
Yeah, Cumberbatch is going to be in Star Trek Into Darkness as well.
People love that guy.
He's creepily cool.
Yeah, but like...
No one knows who he is in Star Trek either. There's like all these,
he's the villain, but that's all we know.
That's my
two senses. I gotta tell you who he is. The bad guy.
We beat you to it, Dave.
He's the guy that doesn't like Kirk.
Right. He's evil. Maybe he's evil Spock.
Wouldn't it be great if like
he didn't have pointy ears? Or is that part of what makes him evil?
Maybe that's
why I don't even have your ears.
Maybe
Spock.
He had them and he lost them in like an industrial accident. And
that
turned to me.
They actually said that in an episode of Star Trek.
What?
There's one of the most famous episodes of Star Trek written by Harlan Ellison. Kirk and Spock go back in time to like the Depression era, and somebody sees Spock's ears, and Kirk in his best, you know, in his most Shatner moment, says, "I see you notice my friend's ears. He was caught in a rice picking accident," and then they nerve pinch him and steal his hat, and he wears a hat. Nice. Done.
That covers it up.
Yeah. What's almost as good as Voyage Home, where he just rips a piece of his robe off and goes for the 80s headband.
Oh, God. Does that happen?
Yeah. Have you not seen the one with the whales?
I've seen it. I don't remember that
He
at
wears
all.
A headband through what the whole thing. Because they land on Earth in the 1980s. And he says, and Kirk says, it's as a bet no humans have ever seen a Vulcan. And Spock just stares at him and like rips like a perfectly stitched piece
because he's a Vulcan.
Off, I remember it.
And then ties it on, and they're like, "All right." And then he goes swimming with the whales.
Yeah,
but that's like he just doubles his Vulcan powers right there.
They are not the hellier whales.
Clearly aren't. Real quick, what do you think is better, Doctor Who or Star Trek?
That is a great question, Dave, and that is not one I am prepared to answer. So to get a better answer, let's talk to Bill Monroe out in Seattle. Bill is a veteran of the Play Cool audio commentaries, a lifelong Star Trek fan, and a new Doctor Who fan. So let's see what he has to say. I want to welcome you to Caffeinated Comics, and I want to say how regretful I am that we don't do it where you live in Seattle, because my God, that coffee's amazing.
You know, it really is. It's great to be here, and I am well caffeinated for this call.
What have you had today?
You know, so far I had a pot out of the French press. That was the beans were Pete's. I wrapped up the last of that, and now to take it down for the podcast, I'm working on some Chinese green tea.
You're the only person we've ever had who had to get less caffeinated for the podcast.
it's about evening it out. It's about that same reason why you need to have that cup of coffee before you go to bed at night. Otherwise, you just can't sleep.
Yeah, I've learned that sometimes I fall asleep 2 hours after the late cup of coffee. I'm working on a Keurig Starbucks Pike's Roast with some sugar-free caramel macchiato mate in it. So I hate you.
Yeah, you know, the pike roast is actually some pretty good stuff. What I found with the Keurig is that you really have to set it for one of the smaller cup settings. I've always liked the Keurig, but it's just a little too weak. Either that, or maybe I shouldn't be making a French press where half the pot is filled with grounds.
That's true. So basically, you could grow a plant in your pot of coffee.
I probably could, actually, to tell you the truth, what I was doing, and my girlfriend was horrified when she thought this, because she thought I was just collecting dirt on my counter, which, to be fair, is the kind of thing I would do. But what I actually started doing was taking all the grounds out of the pot, out of the press when I was done, and just sort of collecting them and drying them out so that I could actually add them to the plants out on my deck. And of course, I do have the two coffee plants in my apartment too. But yeah, there's a strange intersection in my apartment between, you know, plants, dirt, and the kitchen. Although I assure you, it is almost possibly healthy, maybe. Sort of.
This could very easily. I didn't even realize this. We since we're Caffeinated Comics, we should probably do an entire show just about the coffee side of the comics. We spend way too much time talking about the comics, not enough on the coffee.
There's never enough on the coffee.
That's a good point. But it's very apropos that you switch to tea after drinking coffee, because, as you know, this show is the U.S. versus England. So I wanted to get your perspective, because you are an avowed lifelong Trekker and an avowed lifelong Shatner fan, aren't you?
I am. You know, the Shatner is really interesting, because I can never decide if I think Shatner is just awesome or just awful. He manages to strike that incredible balance at the same time, where you can't believe that someone like him is a part of this world, and you can't imagine this world without Shatner.
We were just in the store today watching the Epics documentary, The Captains. And it's so clear in that, because in that one he interviews every other Star Trek captain, but he manages to turn the conversation on himself every time.
Sure.
And it's so clear that he has no awareness that he's even doing it.
It really is striking. And one of the things that I found, I've read pretty much all the Shatner memoirs, because yes, I had too much time on my hands at one point, I imagine. But one of the things that always strikes me about that is that in almost all of his books, he's entirely clueless about how people see him, until you get to Up Till Now, which is one of his more recent memoirs. And that's where he actually gets really reflective. It came out after his after the album Has Been. Great album from both a camp and just a great musical perspective on both sides. It's amazing. Again, talking about someone striking that balance. But in that book, he talks about how his entire career is driven by one thing that his father told him back in high school, when he said he wanted to pursue a career in theater and acting back in Canada. And that was to basically not be a hanger-on. To whatever you do, don't be a slacker. And that's led to Shatner just having this incredible work ethic, where if he stops working, he really feels like his entire world is going to collapse and everything he has is going to be gone, which is why he says no to nothing.
Right. It's kind of like have you seen the documentary Conan O'Brien Can't Stop?
No, I haven't.
It's great, because it's all about the tour he did between The Tonight Show and TBS. And it's very true to that title. Mm-hmm. It's that same Shatner work ethic. And he was on was he on the Nerdist when he was talking about this? Or
He could have been. And actually, interestingly enough, that same work ethic, you know, you hear that same thing from Chris Hardwick on the Nerdist. Mm-hmm. You know, he talks about how, you know, going on vacation and suddenly slowing down and not having a project and having to launch something and having to create something, how that becomes really exhausting. When you get to the point where you just fill your life with projects and stuff and work, and you absolutely have to keep going. You know, it's something that you see from, you know, a lot of times, I think, when we look at the media and we look at people who are, you know, maybe on TV or maybe just doing something, and we think, and it looks like, you know, those lies, you know, how hard is it to get up there in front of a camera and say a few words? But once you start learning more about more of the people who are successful and who last in this business, it's this incredible drive to keep working and keep doing something and keep creating something. Whether you're looking at someone like Hardwick and what he's done with the Nerdist Network, to Felicia Day and her Geek and Sundry channel, to taking it back to Star Trek, when we look at George Takei's life post Star Trek, getting deeply involved in the politics and race relations in Northern California in a post internment era for Japanese Americans, or Leonard Nimoy, who has acting and being Spock and trying to deal with being Spock, and then the fantastic directing career, and then once he's done with movies, what does he go? He goes ahead and creates an entirely new photography career. I mean, it's not the kind of thing where people are just always striving to stay in the spotlight, which is sometimes what you see with Shatner. It seems that way sometimes, but with these other folks who just have this burning desire and not even a desire, but a need to create and to produce content, even if their audience is going to be a lot smaller. And I think that's both fascinating and it's refreshing to see a lot of these people who are working their tails off because they have to.
And that's a perfect segue into both Doctor Who and Star Trek, which are these two franchises that have lasted over 40 years. With Doctor Who, it's a little blurrier how many episodes there are because they break them, a lot of them, into the story arcs, and a lot of them are gone. But I know with Star Trek, there's over 700 episodes. So being a lifelong Star Trek fan and obviously having that background and that knowledge, when you first got into Doctor Who, what kind of struck you in comparison to basically the architecture that you had built in your head for TV sci-fi, which is Star Trek?
Sure. Well, what struck me is coming into Doctor Who, my first Doctor was Eccleston, and he's still pretty much my favorite. I mean, one of the first things I remember about watching my first episode of the new Who was when just seeing the opening music come on, and obviously the updated version, but just remembering that from the closing credits of Doctor Who in the 70s when it aired in syndication on Saturday mornings.
Now, did you used to watch it then, or?
No, I never watched it.
And I was the same. I would run into it because they would, in the main studio, they would put it on before Monty Python, so I would always catch the end of it.
But right.
I never quite hooked into it, which was strange because I got super into Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which when you look back, in a lot of ways is a parody of Doctor Who.
Right. But, I think at that point it was just that there was something else going on. There was just never a strong desire for me on my part to get into it. It was always just sort of one of those things that was just sort of off to the side and not really a focus. I mean, Hitchhikers, I remember encountering that first in the miniseries on TV, like that parody like thing. But that was actually a goal to go out and actually start watching that, even as a little kid. Maybe I was just a little older when I started watching Hitchhikers versus the original Doctor Who. But yeah, no, it's that was very different. By the time we got into New Who, obviously we already had, significantly better production values. I mean, there's really very little to compare New Who to the original series.
Right, in terms of budget. And that was one of my reservations for ever trying Who, was I used to say proudly, I can take original Star Trek. That's as cheap as I will go. Like when you land on the Western planet and it's a saloon door and a table, that's right. As much as I can handle. And Doctor Who is so much cheaper than even that.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, the other thing that's coming at it though is that, there's very different types of stories. I mean, New Who, I think, has more in common with Next Generation than it does with original series. I mean, original series is interesting. I mean, obviously, Gene Roddenberry originally describing it as just, a wagon train to the stars. I mean, it's a Western. In many ways, it's a, if you view original series as a sincerely in the way that Roddenberry was talking about, rather than in the campy way we often look at many of those episodes today. It really was more of a predecessor to Firefly than anything else. I mean, it's Roddenberry and Whedon were essentially trying to do very similar things in creating.
I always thought that Firefly was basically the Millennium Falcon dropped into the Star Trek universe. And I think it's very deliberate, because when you see their version of the Federation, you know, and it's these skyscraper buildings of space, and they're all wearing tight gray uniforms.
Right.
And it always seemed to me that those would be, it's like that the episode of The Next Generation, The Outrageous O'Connor, which is not a good episode, with Billy Campbell, who was the Rocketeer, where he's like a space pirate. And it's like, Firefly would be like, what's that guy's life like? You know, if you don't get into Starfleet and you're good at everything that Starfleet does, mm-hmm. you know, that was Firefly, which is one of the reasons I love it.
That's a real interesting perspective. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's real interesting in Star Trek in the original series. There's less of it in Next Gen, but in the original series, the only people in space are Federation starships, Romulan starships, Klingon starships, and the occasional, you know, planet made out of light bulbs. But you know, once you start getting into Next Generation, you start encountering more of the civilians and more of the third party space, and
yeah, you get a lot of cargo ships and
yeah, exactly. You see a lot more of that in Enterprise as well.
Deep Space Nine was basically built around that idea.
Exactly, and so that becomes real interesting. So suddenly, the Federation is in a broader context. But one of the things that's always really interesting is that in Star Trek, the Federation is always overreaching. Everybody is defining their relationship and what they do in terms of the Federation. And that's in complete contrast to the role of the Time Lords and the Doctor in Doctor Who, where most of the universe does not know, or rather, most of Earth does not know he exists, even, and do not understand what the Doctor is. All they know is that every Christmas now it's time to abandon London.
Yeah, because the aliens are attacking. And there's also the idea of when there were other Time Lords, which is not really the case in New Who, but in Classic Who, is that they've always painted the Doctor as a renegade.
Right.
That he stole, you know, we know he stole the TARDIS, which is one of the reasons it's wonky. Because it's outdated and slowly breaking down, which is why it can't be anything other than a police box.
Right.
But like the other Time Lords kind of let him do what he wants to do, but they don't really approve of him, which is in direct opposition to the Federation.
Sure. Well, and actually that becomes real interesting. That's because the Federation sort of treated Kirk that way in many respects. You know, Kirk was always, you know, sort of sort of prime directive be damned. But Kirk
always kind of coasted on his successes. He spent his capital.
Okay.
You know, he would save Earth from obliteration, and because of that they would let him keep a ship.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense. I suppose that's a worthy prize for saving the Earth from obliteration.
Yeah, it's like being a creative genius and an asshole. which I think we can bestow on Kirk and the Doctor.
Well, you know, and that's what's interesting about the Doctor. And this, I think, is where we start to see some parallels between the Doctor and Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, and
the five-headed beast that is the captain.
Captains. And the same parallels exist between Sherlock and Elementary, between Holmes in British in the new British in the Moffat series, and Holmes in the American version of the story. In that, what we see with the Doctor is that he can kind of go off on a tear, and Eccleston did this great. Of course, he had just watched his entire race be obliterated, so that will mess you up.
Yeah, I always found that was such a strange idea for rebooting the series. Is like, okay, we're gonna make a sequel. It's not Batman Begins. It's but we're gonna have him come out of this horrible war, which I was convinced for months was part of the classic series I had never seen.
Right, I just assumed that as well.
Yeah, it wasn't until I had seen all of the Sylvester McCoy episodes where I was like, oh no, this is just backstory that he threw in.
you know, to give the series some weight, which was I found really strange, a really strange way to kind of you're bringing the property back by killing most of what's around it. It was a lot like when the 90s Green Lantern, when Kyle Rayner became the Green Lantern, it was because Hal had gone evil and killed every other Green Lantern, and there was one ring left, and they gave it to the first guy they saw.
Uh-huh.
Which made that book really interesting, but after a while, just like Doctor Who, it's like, all right, we missed the organization. We have to bring it back somehow.
Right, right. Well, you know, and what's really interesting, though, is that the Doctor is almost always held up as, yeah, he has some things he has to deal with, and occasionally he has a temper tantrum. But really the Doctor is held up as a paragon, as an ideal, as with a level of perfection that we don't see. I mean, when we look at, the Doctor as compared to Kirk or compared to Picard, the Doctor always has this confidence about him, mm-hmm. whereas a Star Trek captain is always having to question themselves. They're damaged. They're broken people in a way that the Doctor isn't. Even when the Doctor...
Well, I wouldn't say they're damaged or broken people. What I would say is that they rely on their support staff more. When you look at the cast, every Star Trek series has a cast of seven. And especially with Next Generation and the other shows set in the 24th century, there's always a conference because there's always the captain getting all the opinions of everyone. Everyone has a role. With Doctor Who, it's the Doctor doing what he wants, and the companion is sometimes there to stop him.
Right. Well, you know, and I think what's interesting is, you know, and I'm sure I'm going to offend anybody from British sensibilities here.
Oh, we've already done that in the studio.
But I wonder, you know, how that translates to just a broader American view of authority versus a British view of authority. I mean, the British, it seems there's a lot of, it doesn't seem like in the American approach, we have this tendency to, as soon as somebody has some authority, as soon as somebody is in charge, we want to see them broken. We want to see them weakened. We want to see them, you know, see their flaws. And we focus on that, you know, and with, you know, a maniacal break of looking at the flaws of whatever leader we have. We see that happening in politics. We see that with the attacks on, you know, and it's not partisan. It happens all over the place on both sides. We see that with, you know, when we look at Kirk, we see, you know, a captain that is just so flawed. When we see when they rebooted Picard, rebooted Star Trek, they actually had to split the captain role to take away some of just the swashbuckling cool that Picard, that Kirk had. They had to try to take that away from Picard, and, you know, obviously they ended
give
up
it to Riker. But then one of the interesting things about Star Trek is that once Jonathan Frakes got heavy and had a beard, and Patrick Stewart got bored, those roles got reversed.
Right.
There's it's Riker who's on the bridge with one leg up on Data's console for no reason at all, and it's Picard who's down on the planet in his velour jacket.
Right. And then at the same time, though, when we start looking at that, you think, okay, maybe we're seeing Picard now, the person in charge, getting all this authority back. At the same time, now Picard is existing in contrast to Starfleet. We're now often seeing, you know, oftentimes in Next Generation, Starfleet and the admirals are portrayed as the shady, the weak, the ones who don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Again, it's that tendency to tear down the authority and to tear down the leadership.
Well, final question. Best Star Trek captain, best doctor, who are they and who wins in a fight?
Best Star Trek captain is Janeway.
Okay, and the doctor she will face?
The doctor she will face Eccleston.
That's good, because I see her having no patience for Matt Smith, just considering the way she treated Q.
Yeah, no, she would have no tolerance for that. But I mean, Eccleston, I mean, what Janeway has the sensibility of a Picard, the patience of a Sisko, and just the occasional time that just says, forget it, I'm just going to do what needs to be done, of Kirk. You know, where I really grew to appreciate Janeway was, you know, it was really in the second episode or part two of the pilot of Voyager, where she's telling Paris about steering the Enterprise away and out through some doors that are, or not the Enterprise, the Voyager, out through doors that are rapidly closing. And she says something to the effect of, you know, one of the things they taught us in Star Trek is that steering a starship is a very delicate and precise maneuver. But sometimes what I've learned, you just have to punch it.
And now against Eccleston?
And Eccleston, what I like about Eccleston is that he is the most clearly alien of the three new doctors. Mm-hmm. Because he does not seem human. He's got this trying to be human and this twitchy thing that, you know, with his head and his eyes darting around where, you know, he just ain't, that boy just ain't right. And I would really like to see him against Janeway, because they've got those very interesting approaches. They've got those very different ways of doing it. They're both no nonsense when it comes right down to it. I think they could very well destroy each other. It wouldn't be the first time Janeway faced off against a Time Lord.
It's much harder to compare Doctor Who and Star Trek than it is to compare Star Trek and Star Wars. Mm-hmm. If you compare Star Trek and Star Wars, Star Trek wins.
Really?
You think so? No question about it. Star Wars is two good movies.
Yeah.
And then four bad movies and a really boring cartoon.
Wow.
Oh, three really boring cartoons.
Those are three good movies. Those first three aren't bad. What are you saying? Jedi's
not that good.
It's not bad. I mean, Ewok's thing's pretty dumb.
It's as good as Temple of Doom.
Dr. Jones.
Temple of Doom has the best opening in Indiana Jones movie.
Mm-hmm. Had a musical number that Spielberg has always been wanting to work on.
Right? Yes. The musical numbers, I could do without the blonde girl.
That's the thing about Temple of Doom, is it's one of those movies. Fantastic Four is one of these movies, but Fantastic Four is much worse.
We just watched that today in the shop.
I'm glad we did now.
Yeah, where every 5 minutes, and I'm a huge Fantastic Four fan, it's my favorite comic.
Yeah.
And Fantastic Four drive me so crazy. I don't think it's bad in like the way the Ghost Rider is bad.
Or Daredevil.
Or Green Lantern. Yeah, what? Or Daredevil or Elektra.
What is this? Heresy, I hear.
But Fantastic Four nails it and then completely does something wrong every alternate 5 minutes.
They just go back and forth.
They just they nail the characters. I'm like, oh my god, that's Reed and Sue right there. And then they cut to like,
no way.
And then they cut.
That's what I was thinking when I saw Jessica Alba. I was like, all right.
Casting wise, no. But then they cut to like Johnny doing extreme sports, and they're surrounded by supermodels at every opportunity.
Yeah.
In Vancouver. Yeah. And my biggest problem with Fantastic Four is probably going off topic. Well, there's British guys in that, right? Both Reed and Reed's British. Reed's
British, yeah.
But
there's one British guy in that.
At least one.
Who steals another American role. Yes. We need to start seeing, you know what?
There's this undercurrent of hate.
Can we just remake the Harry Potter movies with American
Americans. And I want an American playing James Bond, and I want an American directing James Bond.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg.
All of those take place in England.
Not anymore.
All of them.
Not anymore.
These are not English people taking roles from Americans. You are proposing Americans take jobs from England. So this is like some kind of retribution.
This is 40 acres and a mule. This is exactly my 40 acres and a mule.
For Andrew Garfield
and three
Americans invented Batman. Americans invented Spider-Man. England people played those characters in the most
They're
recent
called
movies.
The English.
The English.
You're losing ground just by not knowing what they are.
The bastard English.
You know what? This is what I want in retribution for that. I want the cast of Jersey Shore.
There you go.
And Harry Potter. I want them to be headmasters of different houses.
I want the cast of Jersey Shore to play the Defenders. Any one of them could be Hulk.
Any one of them.
Yep. Snooki.
I'd be okay with that.
Snooki gets the Hulk status.
Yeah.
Because doesn't she do that? Like when she drinks, she just Snooki smash all over? Isn't that what they do?
Is that
what
she does?
Isn't that what they say? Like GTL and smash, smash, smash?
I don't know.
ever see that
show. I love
show.
That it's a reality show, but we can break these people down into, isn't that what she does?
That's like her thing,
that's
right?
That's her thing, right?
Yeah, that's what she does.
That and that duck phone. She's just smooching or smashing or duck something. I don't know. There's something about
I think
about
you know
duck
a little
phone.
Too much about this show, Dave.
I do.
My mind went right to like the duck car the penguin rides in Batman Returns.
I think that's in Jersey Shore, too.
I driving around in that.
I think that happens.
Like, which, again, like would not surprise me.
No, I wouldn't bat an eyelash.
But yeah, real quick, just Harry Potter, Jersey Shore, Hollywood, make it happen. James Cameron, get behind the wheel. He can make
it. We're looking at you, James.
James Cameron, I'm talking to you. Talking to you. In 3D. Oh, my God. That's going
to
make $1 million.
How are you talking to someone in 3D?
James Cameron's going to spend the next 10 years inventing a camera.
Doesn't that just mean you're in the room with him?
Oh, yeah, I am. In spirit. In spirit. But he'll do it. He has the camera to do it. I mean, if they can make... Oh, you know what else we took from them? We took it from the French, but I was going to say Tintin.
Well, Tintin's Belgian, yeah.
Belgian,
yeah.
But we kind of did it because it was Spielberg, but it was also Peter Jackson, who's New Zealand.
Yeah, but they all have that
and
same
that's a British
funny
cast.
Accent.
And that's a whole British cast. That's Daniel Craig and Andy Serkis and Jamie Bell. So it's mostly them. It's basically Spielberg hanging out with British guys.
Oh, no, he's turning, isn't
he's
he?
He's turning.
He is.
He did always want to direct James Bond.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe he thinks
that's where Raiders
like his,
came
like,
from.
This is like his gateway
no,
into
Spielberg,
it.
Come back.
Come back to the light,
we Spielberg. Have the dollar menu at McDonald's. And
speaking of, you know how much a McDonald's hamburger costs in Sweden? It costs $9. Nine American dollars.
Are they importing them?
Because it's so much better.
No. They are not so much better. They are just about the same. Just what you'd expect. But over in Sweden, it's like there's no fast food.
Because it costs $9.
And it takes a long
time. So does that mean...
I'm sure it's not successful.
I hope that...
They're always crowded.
If that's like the theory behind it, then when you go to an actual restaurant, does that cost like... A hamburger there costs like $4?
No. No, it's like... It's like more expensive. So like a hamburger at like a fancy restaurant would probably be like $40. Sweden's very expensive.
Do we need to take them
how
over?
How do they manage to live in Sweden?
This is
do they get paid very much money?
We asked a lot of people. Minimum wage in Sweden is set in increments. And the older you get, you keep moving up into the next bracket of minimum wage. So you can keep like the same
job
your whole life. And you'll always be moving up in pay.
So basically, you're guaranteed
you
raises.
How much do podcasters make in Sweden?
I don't know. I didn't hear any podcasts
how
in
much,
Sweden.
Oh, how much
we
does
could
it,
get over there and just...
How much does it cost for a coffee? Oh, today's coffee, because Steven forgot.
I did.
Comes to us courtesy of Keurig and Coffee Mate.
Yeah, which is an incredible machine.
It's a great product.
It worked really well.
I would be so proud to talk more about the machine. Had I known
what did
how
you
it
say
operates.
It was like?
What did I say it was like? Oh, I said it was like the Ghostbusters
yes.
containment unit
picture
of coffee.
Picture that, except instead of putting a ghost in the negative zone, it gives you coffee.
What is that? Because I always thought they just had a big cage on the other side of that cinder block.
They're putting them in another dimension. They have to be.
I think in the cartoon, they actually got sucked into there and it was another dimension.
They did. Yeah. Slimer got sucked in there.
They send him in to like go do tests or something and gets trapped.
They
and
did.
Then they bring the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man out of there to fight
who's,
a giant mantis monster.
Who turns into a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Because Slimer hangs out with him. He's just misunderstood. He's a sailor.
Yeah.
He's a sailor?
Isn't he? Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, remember?
He's got a sailor.
Oh, yeah.
He's right. A sailor.
I thought we were still talking about Slimer.
He's in New York.
We get this guy laid.
All right, what happens if England remakes that?
The Ghostbusters?
Oh, my God. It is on. It is on. Get Paul Revere. We're going to start this whole party back up again.
Find that famous actor no one knows about, Paul Revere.
Yeah.
There's
an actor. I'm sure there's some guy with his headshot that's Paul Revere
he's
right
like,
now.
Probably. Wait, they're talking about me? No, not you. The other one.
Anybody American? Was anyone American in the Nolan Batman movies?
Commissioner Gordon?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt? No, he's not. He's from across the pond.
Oh, my
Joseph
God.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
He's American.
He's American.
He's American.
Born and bred.
No, but Gary Oldman's British.
Anne Hathaway?
Batman. Anne Hathaway, okay.
Lucius Fox?
All the women. Aaron Eckhart.
He's American.
He's American.
Yeah, but I mean, Tom Hardy.
Morgan Freeman's one of ours.
Morgan
Freeman. Who's also God.
Again.
God is American.
Again.
I love Morgan Freeman.
But just saying, one of ours.
Well, I didn't mean it like that.
I did.
He's an American.
Yeah, but all the all the villains.
You know, now
all the villains are British. In,
Heath
in the
Ledger's
Nolan
Australian.
Trilogy.
Australian.
Heath Ledger, Liam Neeson, Tom Hardy, and Cillian Murphy.
Yeah. Oh.
All of them.
That's because English people make great villains. They spend their entire lives doing villainous things.
Have we not seen Die
Hard?
Are
you saying all the English are evil?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Since the beginning.
Since the beginning. Colonizing half the planet. You know?
Looks like someone needs to watch
villains do.
That Dalai Lama movie.
The one with Brad Pitt?
With Ben Kingsley.
Are you saying Simon Pegg is evil?
Well, he did kill a lot of zombies.
I don't know. He's got a new space movie coming out.
He's supposed to kill zombies.
What's that new? He's got the third part of that trilogy.
Oh, yeah. Martin Freeman is in it. That's the next thing he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's him and Nick Frost.
All I've seen is like a poster.
It's called like The End of the World.
They're like out in space or something, I think. I don't know.
No, I think. I don't know.
It's like the third.
Or I think aliens are coming down.
Maybe. I thought Paul was supposed to be the third part of that like weird trilogy.
Yeah, but the director did not do Paul because he was doing Scott Pilgrim, so they don't count it. Because they wanted Edgar Wright. They wanted him to do Paul.
Okay.
And he had signed on for Scott Pilgrim. They're counting this one as third. And then he's doing Ant-Man.
Which is weird that he's getting... Ant-Man gets his own movie before, like... I don't know. Pretty much pick any other Avenger.
I think everybody's had their movie now.
I would
now.
Pick any other Avenger.
Over Ant-Man? I know you would, Dave. Yeah. I know your feelings on Ant-Man.
I like the Wasp.
I like Ant-Man and the Wasp, but it's just like, Hawkeye, can you get maybe some love?
He did. It was called that Bourne Legacy movie. What was it called?
It was called the Hurt Locker.
Hawkeye the prequel.
Yeah.
It was called the Hawk Locker.
Hawk Locker.
So basically, that movie would have been much shorter if he was just shooting arrows into bombs.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't that make sense? Why aren't we doing that right now?
Shooting arrows into bombs?
Just get in the hot air balloon, look down, just start shooting arrows.
Why does the hot air balloon come into it?
Because it's quiet and deadly.
But you could also see it coming a mile away.
You could accidentally destroy it with one of your own arrows.
That's true.
That's very dangerous to have arrows on a balloon.
Well, it's in progress of working.
he's working on it. He's spitballing.
There's a phase two. It's called armor in the form of other balloons to distract the main arrow from taking out the big balloon. And
I'm speechless.
This is the weirdest podcast we've ever done.
That's because you wanted to talk about the British.
Yeah.
Yeah. Captain America was still American.
Thank God.
Thank God.
I was a
Hugo, Red Skull was Australian.
Is Hugo Weaving Australian?
Yes.
I consider him part of the Empire, the British Empire.
Do you think?
That's what Star Wars was about. It was about the American Revolution.
Star Wars was made in England.
What?
It was like
of course it was.
Yeah.
Star Wars was made in England, and then the prequels are made in Australia.
I think because they have the bigger sound studios over there, I think.
You want your mind blown? You know what other American institution made in England?
Don't.
Hold on. I'm going to go with Braveheart. What are we talking about again?
Yeah, because that originally took place in Boston.
You know, Braveheart, that famous American, you know.
I'll tell you this. Muppet Show. Made in England.
All of it?
What about the one
all
where
of
they
it?
Take...
All five seasons and the Great Muppet Caper.
Wow.
Takes place in England.
It takes place in England.
Great Muppet Caper, the second one.
Oh, man.
The Mallory Gallery and the baseball diamond.
I have to
Charles
go home
Groton.
And just burn all my Muppet memorabilia right
gotta
now.
It's all got to go. John, I know you've got a lot of that crap around here. Where is it?
All right.
Waka waka. Waka waka.
You'll be saying as like a tear rolls down your cheek. It's like there's this bonfire in your front lawn.
Throw Fozzie Bear in there. Oh,
that's
man.
That's terrible.
I feel like he would keep your house warm for a while, Fozzie Bear, out of all the Muppets.
Yeah, me, yeah. When I gutted him and like was like during that cold winter back in 86 and slept inside of him.
Did he smell bad on the outside?
Oh, he did.
This is by far the strangest.
Wow. He did. Now we know what to expect when Dave comes in the studio.
I was gonna say, just late at night, get some coffee for him, and just hit the record button.
Yeah, exactly.
Real quick.
So now, wait. Now, British comic writers.
Comic writers.
You can't ignore British comic writers. Mm. There's not that many of them, but they're all pretty. They all
leave
pretty large.
They all leave an impact.
Yeah.
We've
talked about Grant Morrison.
We've talked about Morrison. Probably made the... No, Alan Moore probably...
Alan Moore is the first. And honestly, I would put Neil Gaiman ahead of Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
I would say Alan Moore is the first and Neil Gaiman's the second.
Neil Gaiman, then
and
Morrison.
A lot of that is chronological.
Yeah, I mean, it's who kind of gets to it first.
Right. And to be honest, Gaiman basically took Swamp Thing as his guide to start Sandman and then just went in a completely different direction with it.
Yeah.
But then you have guys like Mark Millar, you have Garth Ennis.
I mean, some of the best comic artists come from, I mean, Alan Davis, Brian Hitch, yep. Like these guys are both European.
So maybe you don't hate them.
As much anymore.
Maybe, yeah. There's
as much. I do like the British women.
You know, Mark Waid can't write everything.
He can try.
I think he should. He should try. He should totally have a Marvel month where they just says Mark Waid writes everything.
Oh, what are God. Those things? What are those things? Mad Libs? They should create a comic Mad Lib, like a general one Mark Waid wrote, and just hand them out to all the other writers and just insert, like, when it goes superhero, just write in whatever superhero you're working on. So it would be like the same script that Mark Waid originally wrote, but you just switch up like the main character.
So the Fantastic Four would have the same script as the Punisher.
Yeah. I mean, it would be the greatest Punisher comic ever.
He'd be talking to three other people you've never seen before.
Three other Punishers. People would be like, he has
the Fantastic Punishers.
Oh, God, there's four of them?
They're all exactly the same. Right. It's just
angry guys with machine guns.
They're all just cut and pasted.
Oh, my God, I would read that.
I gotta say, Mark Waid probably, or not Mark Waid.
Jeff Loeb for a while?
Mark Millar probably had a big impact. We were talking about what you started reading comics, and when I was getting into comics, they were launching all the Ultimate titles. And I'm reading all, I mean, Ultimates, I'm reading Ultimate Fantastic Four, Ultimate X-Men. He's got all these different books he's writing, and it's like, everyone was like, there was a weird month or two where like Cyclops called Wolverine a meatball. Captain America called Hank Pym a meatball. And it's like, what kind of... I've never gotten in a fight with my brother and been like...
Is meatball mom?
Meatball. What kind of insult
I feel
is
like that?
That
happened in Greece.
You think so? That's like an insult they throw around Greece?
And I think it was a lead up to a song.
So you think like Mark Millar saw Greece 10 years too late, or what, 20 years too late by the time he wrote The Ultimate?
There's DVDs.
Was like, and he's just like, meatball's a great
like,
insult.
I'm going to call you a meatball.
That's an insult.
If somebody called me a meatball, I'd bust a fucking face in.
Yeah.
I think that's where it came from. He's like, what would make me mad if Hawkeye called me a meatball?
A meatball.
Send.
Man, it was just a weird insult.
Maybe he gets mad at people and he writes some angry emails and the subject line just says R.E. meatball.
That sounds like a delicious email I would eat.
Oh, there's a recipe here. Oh, it's a picture of your bum.
Yeah, it'd be like a picture of like goat balls. And it's like, ah, Mark Millar, come on.
Take that meatball.
Yeah.
He's almost like an angry sailor. Just, hey, meatballs.
Well, no, wait a minute. Is Warren Ellis?
Warren Ellis is English.
He's English too, because he's got a bit of a rivalry, I guess, with Mark Millar.
Really?
Yeah, I guess when Civil War was going on, he was writing Warren Ellis was writing Next Wave and kept making all these jokes about the Ultimates and kind of taking all these digs at him. But I don't know.
Ellis wrote my favorite Iron Man story ever. And it's only Extremis is only 6 issues.
Yeah.
And then he's gone. I mean, he could have stayed on that book for years. But it's a perfect little story.
It seems like
and
he had his one story to tell and then kind of got in, told it, and then he's just like, all right, I'm done with Iron Man.
Right, and we've talked about that before, that a lot of writers come on a book and their first arc is the greatest story you've ever seen because they've saved it up for so long, and then following it up is such a hard task. Unless there's somebody like, say, Hickman who goes, my story takes 3 years.
Yeah, and maybe that's like job security. You know, it's like, he's like, oh, man, I don't know how – I'm like – hot now, but how long does that last? He's like, all right, I'm gonna tell a story over 3 years. Give me your worst book. And they're like, here's Fantastic Four, it's not selling really well. And it's like, boom, 3-year arc, and it's awesome.
Yeah, but there's no guarantee that they won't pull you off after a year and everybody goes, what the hell was going
on? What was
he
talking about? Much like Mark Millar's run on Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Like, that book was offending me on like a semi-monthly basis.
Yeah,
because
and
just,
Hitch
like,
was like, it was almost not inking at that
done.
Point.
It was just like, oh my
some
God.
Fantastic Four.
But then Hickman tried to tie some of those storylines back
for,
into.
To his credit, he tried to use what he could out of like whatever that tangled
right. like he used,
mess of.
He used the fact that Galactus was gone.
The corpse?
Yeah.
Galactus, yep. He used those future
although
characters.
That Galactus corpse pops up a lot because I remember Pacheco had a Galactus corpse when like they let Pacheco write it and then Jeff Loeb came in dialogue.
That was years ago.
That was like 2000, 2001.
Wasn't that when like
still within the decade.
Because I remember having like an issue of that like and it's like a meteor's like coming to hit the Earth and at the last minute Reed's like, don't worry about it. And it like crashes in New York and it's like Galactus's skull in his helmet was like the meteor and it's like, I just remember that being like an awesome visual and then never having any.
Yeah, but I remember
story.
Pacheco using that as the cover of like the 2001. That was a part of my problem with Mark Millar was he was doing a lot of ideas that had already been done. Because I've read, I have read every Fantastic Four issue and And he was like, I've got this great idea where Galactus is dead. And I was like, yeah, they
did
that.
We did that already. And in
I've
fact,
got this idea where Reed has an old girlfriend. They did that already.
When was he
I've got
reading?
This idea where there's a counter-Earth. They did that already.
Well, think like...
I'm a genius!
Reading,
but that's like the same thing was going on when Jeff Loeb did Hush. Everyone was just saying these are the same ideas that we already had before.
We've had before. Yep. Well, like Mark Millar was reading comics in like, what, like the late 80s, early 80s maybe? Mid 80s? In the 80s.
Right.
I've been reading the... Acts of Vengeance omnibus, which I got because I had like all this stupid credit piled up at the shop we used to work at, and
which is an informal crossover. It's just
it's awful, but
yeah, it's all
through
over the
whole crossover. They're talking about Superhuman Registration Act.
Yes,
heroes should be registered.
It was a big that was Civil War in like 1989,
and then
yeah.
Mark Millar must have read that and been like, "Oh, here it is, Civil War. We'll just take it to the next level."
And I'm fine with that. Let's bring that this story idea and really run it through. It's like when Joss Whedon launched Astonishing X-Men, and I have nothing bad to say about Joss Whedon, but he brought in, we have a cure for mutants, which they were doing in the 90s.
There's been a cure for mutants since mutants have been around.
What was
right.
it? What was that?
Extermination! That's the cure for mutants!
Like, is that with Bastion?
Oh, in the 90s? I don't
know. It was like the Sinister. I remember Bacalo was drawing X-Men. I remember Rogue asked for the cure. And it was like right around the time, I think it was like Steve Siegel, like Joe Casey, like that era. But this cure for mutants came up and it didn't really go anywhere. It was like the legacy virus, whereas this
just kind of petered
subplot,
out.
Yeah, just subplot underneath, but
yeah,
never
like,
really
let's
became
kill
a big
couple
story.
Cool mutants and then like end it.
Yeah, and then of course, no more mutants in House of M,
which completely destroyed all that Astonishing X-Men stuff.
Yeah, and which gutted X-Men for a long time. Yeah. Because it was also one of those where they were like, there's only 198 mutants. Which ones are they? We're not telling you.
Because that way,
any writer can create a new mutant character and say, oh, he's one of the 198 that no one's ever seen before.
Exactly. Yeah, and that was something where it was when Astonishing X-Men was coming out, when Whedon and Cassidy relaunched it, it was like, all right, this is an awesome book. And then at the same time House of M is going on, it's like, Astonishing X-Men was selling so well that they were just like, well, we're going to just wrap up and do our own thing, and the whole House of M thing, the next writer will address that. And if you read Astonishing X-Men, it's in a vacuum. It doesn't take place.
He stated it takes place in, like, what, 3 days? Like, the first 12 happened in, like, 2 days, 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. Then there was a gap. And then the next one happened, and that was like in one day, like the Hellfire Club and all that.
And it's because
you see that because Nick Fury is in the first 12, and then later
and then
he's on gone.
He's gone, and
they
don't
that,
mention
right,
it.
That
they don't
sword
mention
thing.
Why he's gone. There's like a line like, you know, the sword lady's like, well, you're not Nick Fury, and she leaves Maria Hill or whatever.
Well, it's a lot like Whedon. They treat Whedon a lot like they treated Grant Morrison on Batman now. It's just like, okay, you got your story, just tell your story.
I'm glad they did.
You can ignore everything. And it seems like. It seems like Grant's building up to this thing. I don't know where he's going, but it almost seems like he's getting ready to kill off Damian. And it's like, yeah, you have Batman and Robin with Damian.
Is this the death in the family? Or death
of No, he is not involved in the death of the family. He's just doing his own story in Batman Incorporated.
Grant Morrison.
Because he's awesome. British, and that brings us around full circle.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week, the Hub has put Animaniacs back on the air. And it hasn't been on in a while, and it's 20 years old at this point. We've been buying the DVDs. I've been watching them with my son, and I'm amazed by how much he loves them 20 years later, that they're not dated as much as they show, like, Bill Clinton and Russ Burrow.
Yeah.
But still, just how sharp it is and how strong it is and how good the writing is. It's just, it makes me laugh out loud, sometimes out of nostalgia, but sometimes it's a completely new experience. And came at a point where Warner Brothers was really willing to spend money on their cartoons. I mean, it's
didn't
the same era.
Spielberg produced that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he's produced Looney Tunes.
He's in it enough, too.
Or Tiny Toons.
Tiny Toons. He started with Tiny Toons, then it was Animaniacs, which spun off Pinky and the Brain. And there's a show that no one remembers now that he did about the Tasmanian
Devil.
Called Tasmania.
Really? I remember
it was really dry. It was just, it took place in Tasmania, and it was about the Tasmanian devil and his family all spoke normally.
Yeah, show was actually like, it carried well.
They all carried really well, and that's what's amazing about it. And I think it was partially that, and I think also in the early 90s, everybody was trying to catch up to Simpsons, because Simpsons was so different and so smart.
Yeah.
That everybody wanted to be smart for a long time. And that's why you saw shows like The Tick showing up on Fox. But and not only is it now rerunning, which it hasn't rerun in a very long time, and I'm hoping Pinky and the Brain is next because that's one of my favorite cartoons ever made, is they're finally – it's taken about 5 years, but they're finally releasing the final volume on DVD. So the final 25 episodes will be out. And
how many seasons was Animaniacs?
You know, it was one of those where it was a daily show, so I think it was something like 100 episodes, but they probably did like 65 up front and then 13. The same way they did Batman.
Yeah.
You know, Batman, it was that 65 chunk, and then it was 13, then it was 10, then they changed character designs, and it was 13, it was 13.
That was a great show, too. That was like that was the first time I'm watching that, and like an adult would be like, hey, what is this?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a thing called Batman. It's Batman. Sit back.
What does he do?
Enjoy yourself.
Dave?
What's your favorite thing right now? The dollar sausage burrito at McDonald's.
And thus joins the first food item to the thing I'm currently obsessed with.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a reasoning behind that? Or
it's a dollar. It sounds disgusting, but it's satisfying. It does sound disgusting. Like, I never trusted McDonald's with any Mexican food / breakfast of make, but it's not too bad.
By the way, is it literally a breakfast sandwich?
It's a breakfast sausage burrito.
No key. No K in the word. Breakfast.
Yeah.
It's a breakfast sandwich.
If you order something.
Breakfast sandwich.
If you pronounce the K, they laugh at you.
We don't have that here.
And is this permanent on the menu?
Or for a limited time.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
We're going to have to post this one earlier.
Oh, also, real quick.
So it's time.
Wings. McDonald's is going to make hot wings. It's going to be coming out on the East Coast.
Yeah.
It's only going to be for a limited time because wings are so expensive, apparently.
Yeah. That's why Buffalo Wild Wings doesn't give you a lot of wings for stupid cheap.
Yeah.
All right.
Steven, I feel bad for a lot of chickens out there.
Mine isn't food related. But the if I was any better at memory, I'd remember the proper title and the author. The Marvel Comics, it's like the untold, unauthorized like history of Marvel, told by like interviews, and like they tracked all these people down and asked them, and it's like the entire history of the company, presumably up until like the Avengers was made. And so you find out like, wow, Jack Kirby really had like a lot of falling outs over the years that led to the big falling out that made him leave Marvel and go to DC, and then, you know, him coming back. And you find out like Jim Steranko like was a major car thief and was stockpiling automatic weapons in his basement because he's just like a crazy guy.
So it's kind of like the Star Trek book I was talking about on the first podcast.
Yeah, we got Stu was at the shop one day, and some guy like brought in like a preview copy of the book, and it says on like not for sale preview copy or editor's copy.
Is it out yet?
It is out. Okay. Yeah.
Can you get that at Chimera Comics? Looking at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange Park.
We don't have it.
Well, you should order it.
I'm going to look into it now that, you know, by the time this podcast hits, I'll have made an effort to have ordered it and have it in the store.
Oh, okay, cool.
All right. Yeah. So that this was not the way I envisioned this podcast going.
No.
But I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And the British have soccer, but we have football.
Football.
Okay. In this war, we took David Beckham. We took him from England.
Does he live here now?
He does, in L.A.
We took
Posh Spice.
We took John Lennon too, and that was not a good decision.
No.
My bad.
Yeah. Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!